I'm Barbara Bray. Welcome to my Rethinking Learning podcast, where I have conversations with inspirational educators, thought leaders, and change agents. Oh, I'm so happy today. I get to talk to Bethany Hill. Welcome, Bethany. It's so fun to have you here.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, you know, I usually like to just introduce everyone. I'm just going to tell them a little bit about you. Bethany serves as lead learner, chief energy officer, and chief storyteller at Central Elementary in, is it Cabot, Arkansas? Did I say it right? Okay. She's been in education for 19 years in the roles of kindergarten, first, second, and third grade classroom. Whew, those are tough. That's really cool. And then you were a curriculum coach, assistant principal, and then principal. You went through
That's where I am now.
I love it. One thing I know you is you're an originator of Eduare. Eduar. Is it Eduar like that? It's
yes.
Eduar, which for Arkansas, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And you're also founder of Joyful Leaders, which I've been part of. I love it. And I've been following you on Twitter. And I love what you write. I'm constantly inspired by you. So I really wanted to talk to you. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, this is just really fun. So we also had a little trouble trying to figure out timing to get us together. And I'm so glad it worked.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So I'd love to have you tell my audience about you, your family, where you live. You want to do a little bit of that?
Absolutely. Sure thing. Well, I live right outside of Little Rock, Arkansas. So most people know where the capital of Little Rock is. That's probably about it as far as Arkansas. It's a very small state, but I live about 30 minutes from Little Rock in a community called Cabot. I grew up in this community, went away for college, and then came back to teach here. And my family, all of my family is here, my immediate family, my parents and my in-laws. And I've been married to my high school sweetheart for 24 years. And we have two boys, Tyler and Garrett, and my son Tyler's at University of Arkansas in college. He is a secondary ed a major and wants to teach and coach. So he'll be finished in a semester and will be adulting after that. Sort of already is a little bit, but he still knows how to come home and do laundry and and visit us and ask for money. So so he still hasn't quite grown up yet, but he's getting there. And then my other son is in ninth grade. He's a freshman at the Cabot Freshman Academy, the same district where I serve as a principal. And I have an elementary school of about 500 kids, P4. So 100 of those kids are four-year-olds. So we have quite a few young ones in our school. And we have about 70 staff certified and classified. And we're in a district of about 12,000. So that can give you kind of a perspective, which for Arkansas is quite big.
Well, you know, what's really interesting is I love that your son's going into education.
Yes. It was quite a shock, actually. I didn't really expect that he loves young people, loves to be around kids and youth, and especially the student athlete. But we did have a hard conversation about, you know, you have to have a heart for teaching. It can't just be about coaching. And so he loves math, and he's looking at possibly teaching math, you know, the junior high level, maybe high school level. So
wow, that's what we need.
Yes, absolutely. We really need it. I told him it'll be job security for sure.
Oh, definitely all around. It's wonderful. Yeah. So you said about heart for education. That really touched my heart right then. Is that what made you go into education? Was there something that in your own education yourself or?
Well, when I was a little girl, I grew up with the best parents ever. They always, you know, allowed me to dream and never taught me about limits. We did not have a lot of money. We grew up, you know, quite poor. And, you know, we grew a lot of our own food, and my mother made a lot of my clothes, and that's just kind of was my world. But I never wanted for anything. I was very loved and very cared for. And from the time that I was very little, just wanted to teach. And my mom tells me stories that I don't even remember all the time of me teaching my stuffed animals. And writing my name down as, you know, a teacher's name and pretending to be my teachers from school. And it was just always part of what I did. And no one in my family ever went to college. So that was a big dream for me, was to try to make sure that I got there somehow. And I did. And in spite of, you know, not having the financial backing for it, we found ways to make it happen. And so I ended up being the first one to graduate from college for my family and to go on and to, get a master's and all of that. So that I'm very proud of. My son will be the second one to graduate from college from my side of the family. So.
Oh, that is amazing. You know, it's I've talked to so many people that say some of the experiences they had really impacted them and wanted them to be a teacher. But knowing that you started right away with stuffed animals, my granddaughter's doing that right now. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
I love it. So you started teaching really young children. And now you still are. You're at the elementary.
I am.
And so you said the size of your school, that's pretty big for an elementary school.
Yes, when I first became principal there, we were a little smaller. We were around 400, but we've had a growth in our community for the last couple of years, and we've just kind of steadily, our numbers have gone up. And I added an additional pre-K classroom a couple of years ago, and then last year, an additional kindergarten classroom. So now that pushed us up to around 490. We hover around 500, so we're full. We don't have one little closet space.
I bet. Well, I've been following some of the things that your school's doing, and it's just, you know, I just love it. Do you want to just share, you know, like some of the things you did before and now, what's different?
Sure. Well, the biggest transition, I think, from going, I went from an assistant principal to being a principal in the same district, but just right down the street at a different school. And so I had to step in and learn a new staff, and they had to learn me. And, that was probably one of the hardest things about transitioning into the role, is because you don't know what to expect when you go in with a lot of people. You don't know what they're expecting. And so we spent a whole year really just trying to build relationships. And we started with The Energy Bus by John Gordon. The whole staff read that, and that was really that was really a starting point for forming a bond of growing the same vision and caring about ourselves as educators, taking care of ourselves, and having our priorities straight before we could, you know, do our jobs in education, so, and serve kids. So that first year was really, really, really great. Spending time getting to know everyone, getting to know kids, kind of learning the culture of the building. And then the second year, we kept on with the Energy Bus and continued to grow in that, and then became an Energy Bus for Schools model campus, which just kind of things sort of fell into place with that, because we celebrated a lot of our Energy Bus success, I guess. And when John Gordon decided to form that portion of his company, he had been following some of the things that we were doing at our school. And so they reached out to us and asked us if we would be willing to jump on board and pilot that. So we did. And that's been a great experience, because we've embedded that language into our building, and families kind of pick up on it, and the community does too. And so that's a big part of who we are at Central.
So for people that don't know the Energy Bus and the, you know, what Ron Gordon's doing, can you kind of give a background of it and then give us some ideas? Then I want to ask you some more questions after.
Sure. John Gordon, he wrote a book called The Energy Bus, and it is a book for adults. It's not an educator's book. It's a personal, you know, a personal growth book. And the basis is 10, it has 10 rules in it that you can kind of, they're like guiding principles of how to live a joyful life. The story is kind of a parable around a man named George, who has a lot of things happen to him that are just very negative, and he's very negative in a very negative place in his life. Very glasses half empty, doesn't see anything good. And he meets someone named Joy, who who tends to kind of show him a different perspective. And over a course of time throughout the book, he begins to learn that it's really on his, it's really how he's seeing the world, not what's happening to him. So it's a very empowering book, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to start with that book, because I didn't know where everyone was professionally speaking or anything like that. I just knew that anybody and everyone can grow from that book. So we started with that for that reason. We still refer back to it to this day. There's a children's book also, and it has 5 rules in it. And so all of our classrooms have that book, and that's how teachers start the school year out every year. They, the first week of school, read that book, and they learn about the 5 rules and what those mean. We always revisit the 10 rules every year, too, and there's a teacher's pledge and a student's pledge involved in, you know, having a positive outlook on the school year, so we always look over that. And it's just a way to kick off the year in a big way, in a positive way, too. Kind of sets everyone up for success. So the Energy Bus for Schools, this is only the 2nd year that it has ever, that it has existed. It came about a couple of years ago with Nikki Spears, who approached John Gordon with a vision of having a version of it for schools. So she developed 7 guiding principles that that can lead a school through common language, through building leaders within teachers and within kids, and even within families in the community too. So it's all about growing leaders and about seeing kids as leaders and empowering them. And so that's been our focus this year during year 2, is we've transitioned that leadership to the students. Last year, we took time owning the 7 principles, learning those, sharing those with kids, exposure. But then this year, we're trying to push that leadership toward the children and help them realize their strengths, their passions, their goals, things like that, and then turn that into something that they want to pursue.
That's really exciting because, well, you know, this is the work I do, you know, with the idea of student ownership. And so the idea that there's something like this that's also for children, even a children's book, which we'll have to get a link to and a picture of the book cover and put those on the blog post that goes with this podcast. That sounds really wonderful because I you know, I've heard it, but I didn't know how long it's been around for school. So knowing you're a model campus is really pretty cool.
There was just us at first, but within that first probably 6 or 9 weeks after she approached me, there were 5 model campuses spread out throughout the country. And Nikki just spent time with us 5 trying to grow how the program would look. Then over year 2, more schools came in. So I think there are around 50 schools now, maybe a few more that have come on board around the country.
Well, that'll be nice. I'd like to get some more information about that to share. And maybe even we'll write another post about just that, because that sounds bigger.
Yes, absolutely.
Sounds pretty big. How long have you been principal at your school? I'm sorry.
This is year 5.
Year 5?
For me. I mean, year 4, I'm sorry.
Year
4 for me.
But 2
yes.
years to do the Energy Bus.
Yes, we did the book, you know, just John Gordon's book for the first couple of years. But then when we were approached about the program starting, we started it last school year. And this is our 2nd school year involved in that. So it's been great.
How was it when you first started? I mean, as a new principal and coming in and trying to initiate joy in. I mean,
yes.
I could think that all your teachers would be excited, but they're probably going, who is this person, right?
Yes. Well, I was in the same district, so I was familiar with a lot of the people there, but not necessarily, you know, close with people. And they were familiar with me. So it wasn't completely, you know, I wasn't a complete stranger when I came in, but it was something I was determined on walking in as a transparent leader and expressing my beliefs on things and stating specifically that we weren't going to come in and just change. We're not going to change everything that's going on, because there are lots of great things going on, and I wanted to observe and soak everything in and get to know people. But there were there were things I felt like that they needed to know, where I stood on specific things regarding just education in general, and even just personal beliefs and traits. And being positive was one of those things. Negativity is something that is hard for me to stomach. It's hard for me to tolerate. And there's a difference between, you know, expressing concerns and being worried about something and even venting a little bit, because we're human and we all have to do that. And we definitely can't hold something back from talking about it just because it's not a positive conversation. We need to face those things, fussing and griping and gossiping and those kinds of things that come along with negativity are really hard for me to take. And it hurts me as a person, and it hurts me as a leader. And I just can't be around it, and most people can't without it becoming toxic for them. So that was one of my things, you know, up front, was that we have to have a positive atmosphere for our kids, because if the adults don't have it, then the children feel it immediately, and their families do too, which means we will not have trust with our families and with the community unless they see our authenticity with joy in what we do as educators. So that has to show, and we have to be out there with it. You know, we can't hold that in, because the more we do, the less likely we are to be trusted as an organization that's here for kids. So that was something that I was very upfront, you know, from the beginning. But it was also something I think that they already knew about me before I came to, because I was in the district, and it was no surprise, you know. So it's a very comforting, warm staff too. So I was so lucky to come in on that, because they were a very tight-knit, close family, family-based staff, and already had that going on. So it was a good fit for me too, as a person and as a leader.
Leadership is not easy. And it's like you just said, it's really, you want to get everyone to be a leader. But if the teachers are negative, because I have walked in schools and I've seen situations or heard situations that I just was very uncomfortable with. And so, you know, knowing that you're bringing in the joy, it's just wonderful. And that's maybe why people want to be at your school and why the teachers are happy there. And I have to say, one of the things that drew me to you was when I go to Twitter and I look at anything that you put up, Bethany, it's just so lovely and joyful and happy and positive. And, you know, I am doing a Twitter chat on coming up, and my first thing is on kindness. It's like we have to bring this back. There's so much negative talk right now. And so, you know, you started on Twitter. I don't even know when you started, but you started with EduR.
Well, EduR Arkansas, it's only been around for about a year.
It's fairly new.
No, it's fairly new. It's myself and two other principals, two of my favorite people in the world, Lindsay Bowler and Karen Norton. They're principals in Arkansas as well at different districts. And the three of us, it was kind of our baby, and we decided to make it happen, and not knowing how it would be, but it kicked off and it did well, and it's a pretty popular chat every week. Our goal is to connect our state more by bringing other people in from out of Arkansas to collaborate with. So far that's been going really well. But before that, I was just an active participant in other chats, and, you know, guest moderate quite a bit, and have met a lot of people that way virtually. And Joyful Leaders came about a couple of years ago too, so that's helped my PLN. That's really helped me grow my network too. So,
well, for me, Twitter is where I've met almost all the people I'm talking to. It's like
absolutely,
it's like family.
Me too.
And what I love is that I know if you now have more characters you can write and the graphics and whatever. But what's really nice is just, it seems to be pervasive that there is a lot of talk about kindness and joy. And I really give you credit. I think Joyful Leaders really led the way. Can you tell me when you do Joyful Leaders and EduR so I can actually put those in?
Sure. EduR is every Thursday evening, from 8:30 to 9:30 Central Standard Time. And we focus on various topics every week. Sometimes we do a series that might last 2 or 3 weeks on a particular topic. Sometimes myself and Lindsay and Karen moderate, just the three of us together. Every once in a while, there'll be one of us who can't be there. You know, that's why we have three of us. But we often have guest moderators, too, that come in. And we went on a long streak for a while where we didn't host at all because we had so many lined up. A lot of great people in the past that have hosted. We've had Dave Burgess. We've had Todd Nesloney. We've had Aaron Hogan when his new book came out. And so we had a math series a while back, too, and that was a big hit with a lot of authors of different math books. And so that was a great focus for us, too. We actually have a chat this week on kindness, on the Great Kindness Challenge that's coming up in next week in schools. And our school, all three of our schools are taking part in that. So we wanted to kind of, you know, focus in on that and see what other ideas people had across the state and beyond. So that'll be our focus tomorrow night. As far as Joyful Leaders, you know, it's not a set chat time or anything like that. It's kind of an ongoing conversation, which was my intention for the hashtag. And it's just a daily dose of inspiration. And people post blogs there. They post graphics. Sometimes just, you know, just powerful small statements that go out in tweets. It is a really, really great place to go when you need just a little fuel to add to your day. Or if you just feel like you have something so good that it needs to be shared, that you know it's going to help someone else. So that's what I love about it, is because the people who go there to get things also contribute back. And so the feed just is running constantly. I go there several times a day, and every time I go, there's been dozens of other, you know, contributions to it. So it has been very fulfilling for me to get to see that happen. And it just had its second birthday in December. So, and it's just hard to believe it's been that long, because it started out as just a doodle in my journal. And I decided one day just to blog about it and push it out there, and just thinking that it would be for me to use mainly, you know, to express my purpose for, you know, things that I push out. And then it just kind of took off. So that made it even better.
I use it all the time. In fact, did you push out the one word 2018?
I did. I know there were several others who did too, but, and of course that's another John Gordon book that I love. And, I attest to the process every year and go back through it every year. This was my fifth year to do that. And so I love to see other people reflecting on the process and sharing their thoughts. And there were constant, posts and things about one word. And so that was very inspiring too. And a lot of people still are learning about it and haven't read the book yet. And so it was a way to kind of expose everyone to that too. With the whole Joyful Leaders, you know, process, the mindset, the everything, I think some people will assume that I'm never anything but joyful all the time. And, you know, that she's never angry, she's never sad, she's never upset, jealous, anything. Well, that's not true, you know, because I'm human. And I know that I could be, sometimes when people are outwardly joyful, they can be scrutinized for that and for being too happy or too jovial. But I just, that's the way I have to be. And I have moments where I vent and I fuss and I whine and I, you know, have pity parties and things like that, just like everyone. But I think that that Joyful Leaders group all understands that and can go and say, you know, I've scrolled through there so many times, you know, with probably not the right mindset. And I'll see one person's graphic or tweet or something, and it's a reminder that I need to turn it around, you know, and get my mind right and shake it off, you know. So that's the reason why it's there, is because we're all human and we all have moments where we cannot see past our own faults or our own mistakes, failures, whatever that may be. So we all need that pick me up.
Well, I love it because I go there a lot. I looked at your word. Your word was
mine's incessant.
Incessant. I know it started with an I.
Yes.
That was an interesting word.
Yeah, and it was a hard word. I kept going back to it, but it has a negative connotation to it, or it can. You know, it's kind of like the word relentless. You know, a lot of that can be seen as a negative thing, but it really, if you use it right, it's very powerful. And so being incessant about the things that I want to do is just meaning that I'm not going to stop. I'm going to stay on the path, stay determined. Doesn't mean there won't be setbacks and there won't be struggles, but I'm going to keep going with it. And so that's basically my premise behind incessant. And I think that's the reason for blogging about it too, and making that public. It's important to share those goals, because people can hold you accountable for them if you do that.
You just put a really nice blog post out on repairing. What was the latest one you just did?
I did one with Joshua Stamper. Collaborated with him.
It was
one about behavior, relationships and behavior. And yes, there's, you know, so much talk about how we handle students' behaviors, because we see a lot of extreme ones now due to kids with trauma, mental health, struggling with mental health or behavioral disorders, things like that. And so it's not just little things like breaking a pencil or, you know, or talking in class or chewing gum. It's bigger things now, you know, anger outbursts and throwing furniture, maybe running from the classroom, things like that. And punishment is just not the answer. You know, if we, you know, make them miss recess or give them lunch detention or suspend them from school, it's just a Band-Aid. And consequences do have to happen, but there are natural and logical consequences that match the behavior versus the ones that are typical. And so it's very controversial right now, because a lot of people will get very defensive about, you know, taking care of their classroom and their kids and the learning environment and having to protect that. And that's vital. It's very crucial. But we also have to look at, when kids aren't fitting in that environment, what are we going to do? Because we can't expect them to conform to us. We have to conform to them, because the problems aren't going to go away. We have to face those and know that they're part of the child. So,
you see, to me, it's the one thing that I found is that it's really difficult to take the time for some teachers to take the time to really build those relationships. But that's the most important. Is those relationships that you have. So we'll put a link to that blog post also.
Oh, yeah.
And any others that come up before this is published, because this is just, I'm really excited about what you're doing. You know, I love that you wrote one thing. You wrote, "The world needs you. You're awesome."
Oh, yes.
I love that. And I'd like to end on that. Tell me what that means and why you say that.
I can't remember how it came about, but it actually was in a conversation with a child at school. It wasn't necessarily a discipline type conversation as much as it was a child who had just lost his motivation because he struggled academically and things did not come easy for him. We, you know, I'd been working with this kid and trying to boost his confidence. His teacher had done everything too. And I, you know, told her that I would come in from behind and, you know, have little, you know, eat lunch with him or have little moments where we could just talk. And so the power of yet came up, and this kid has so much potential. You know, he's full of personality and that's going to take him so far in, you know, just because he has a huge heart and cares about others so much, such a heart of service, but he really does struggle academically. And so we had a long talk and I just said, "The world needs your awesome. So what are you waiting for? You have to show it. And as long as you you get up every morning and you enter a room, you're going to impact it no matter what." I think I blogged something later on and that phrase came out again. And so someone created a graphic of it. I can't remember who. Somebody in my PLN, and pushed it out. And so now it's just become a kind of a something that I ask kids a lot, you know, sometimes teachers too. Bunsy, that I work with a lot, it's a educational creativity software piece that can be used in the classroom. They actually created some stickers that say, the world needs your awesome, so what are you waiting for? And so they actually created a few stickers that people can use to put on their Bunsies and everything too. So it was, yeah, it kind of just started from just a conversation with a kid and grew from there. That was a couple of years ago. So,
you know, that's a great way to just, because we're going to have to do this again and yeah. follow you along the way with everything that's happening and share your school and share what's happening in the classrooms. But it'd be fun to follow that the child that where you said that to.
Yes, he's since moved on and gone to middle school, but I still keep up with him.
Oh,
so and his family.
Well, you've made my day.
Thank you.
This has just been beautiful, and I just love it. Thank you so much, Bethany, for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning podcast and my conversation with Bethany Hill. Look for a complimentary blog post about Bethany, and it includes all these resources and links from her. And please subscribe to the podcast. Leave a review on iTunes. And you can also subscribe to my website, barbarabray.net, to receive announcements and updates so you are part of the conversations.